in there somewhere. Yeah, the piece plays a part, but the piece is not Tovana. You can't say Tovana is the mailing list, the teachers, the members, the mahsan, and a few other things. The interplay of all these things together says something about Tovana. But what makes Tovana really happen is what Buddhist psychology would call Chetana, intention. Yeah. People are intentionally engaging their skills, their interests, their energies for something. So Tovana, if you ask me, is in the intention, is in the heart of these people who call themselves Tovana or who offer the work that Tovana offers. Now you see, intention in my mind alone doesn't really move many things. You know. It is only if I put to my intention, if I affirm this intention, if I give it some importance, if I put my energy behind my intention, if I communicate my intention to other people, if I stimulate other people to put their energy behind their ideas, yeah, and then something starts to happen. It starts with an idea, and this idea translates gradually into manifest reality. So suddenly you become an organization, and you become a structure, and you get places, and you motivate volunteers, and you find suddenly 60 people are operating under the umbrella of Tovana, and make retreats possible for, I don't know, many, many hundreds of people. But this all happens because of an interplay. Now, citta is something like that. There are many aspects of citta, and none of the aspects can be said to be the mind. Yeah. But they all play with each other. And there is a balance in there. That's what I mean, a habitat. Yeah. So the mind can experience impulses, it can experience states, it can experience, obviously, ideas. That's what we are very identified with. And all these things can change. And why do they change? Or how do they change? They change of their own accord. They change because they need support. And if something doesn't receive support, it stops. Something stops suddenly, other things stop very slowly. So our choice, our decision where to go with our attention, is what basically strengthens certain patterns. If we attend to something, then that pattern gets stronger. It's like in the brain. Yeah? If you keep doing certain activities, the neural connections between the parts that are responsible for this to happen get stronger. So the mind establishes patterns, and the patterns form how this mind experiences itself, how it experiences the world, how it relates to that world. So in many ways, the most important thing you can learn about the mind is that that part, that pattern, you give your constant attention, that pattern you give your affirmation that says, yes, I want to do this, that pattern gets stronger. Yeah. If that pattern is fear, then fear will get stronger. Because fear is unpleasant, you need another pattern to keep your fear in check. So you go for control. Yeah. So you have a fear pattern, you need a control pattern. So much of your energy, half of it goes into the fear pattern and the other half goes into the control pattern to keep the fear at bay. You can do that, but it's a lot of work. It's a lot of effort. And it doesn't give much happiness. It doesn't give much samadhi. You can do that with greed. Yeah. So you go into a greed pattern. And then you probably have something like a shame pattern as well, because you know some of the things you want you can't really justify, or other people have opinions about you when you when you're too obvious in what you want. So, or you have an anger pattern. You're also likely to have something like shame or lack of respect or lack of trust or isolation. Yeah, if you're too angry, then people stop loving you. People go away from you. They don't feel safe with you. So you get many of those patterns, and any one of those patterns you strengthen every time you engage with that pattern, any time you affirm that pattern, any time you enact the energy of that pattern, it gets stronger. Yeah? So the same holds true for Brahma-viharas, for loving-kindness. The same holds true for samadhi. The same holds true for investigation. Yeah? So one of the parts of our exercise is to identify patterns that are useful for happiness, useful for harmony, useful for clarity. You all know that. I'm sure I'm not telling you something new. I'm just kind of reiterate this because Buddhist psychology has been so clear and so hands-on on this. It hasn't given us a very neat model with citta. You know, there are teachings that make clearer distinction than Buddhist teachings on citta. You know, these are the good parts and these are the bad parts and this is the defiled part and this is the pure part. You know, you find other models, even in later Buddhism, you find models that make a clear philosophical distinction between mind that is operating with desire and mind that is operating without desire. And they have neat little categories for that. The Buddhist model of citta is much more psychological. It is closer to the actual experience. We all know that some people have very powerful gifts and just two finger breadth besides their powerful gift, they have very glaring weaknesses. Yeah. We know that development is not even. You know, people don't grow evenly. So some people are ingenious, but they don't know how to relate. Yeah. Some people are very brilliant at on a one-to-one level, but they're a disaster in terms of groups. Yeah. Some people are dedicated visionaries, but lousy at administration. Yeah. We all know that. So, citta, the teaching on citta is like the psychological experience in our mind. You know, we have right side by side very inspiring qualities, very wonderful, very soft, very gentle, very powerful qualities. At the same time, there are other things happening in our mind, weakness, anger, helplessness, you know. And just because you have one doesn't mean you can't have the other. So we're a mixed bag, basically. That's what I'm saying here. And the thing that helps in meditation is not to make sure that mixed bag has success in something. It's not about winning. It's about getting to understand the mixed bag. And the only way you can get to understand that mixed bag is by relating to it, by not being afraid of it, by not being fooled by it, by not being besotted by it or infatuated, by not being angry with it, yeah, but by having a relationship to it. So meditation, particularly sati, particularly mindfulness, is a consistent willingness to be there for your mind and what's happening in your mind, to be consistently willing to relate to the experience of your mind right now, rather than demanding that it be concentrated, or demanding that it be peaceful, or demanding that it has extraordinary experiences. Yeah. We bring to our practice a lot of notions: who we are, what success is, what we need to do, what our neuroses and hang-ups are, and what we need to get rid of before we can be decent human beings. I understand this. I have some of those myself. But your practice will never be able to fulfill those expectations because you are not who you think you are. You know a lot more than you believe. If you meet the meditating mind, you will meet many, many different animals in there. Beautiful ones, strange ones, frightening ones, colored ones, unexpected ones, powerful ones, weak ones. Yeah. And basically you need to meet them. That's what the path is. It's not about getting rid of one sort of animal and favoring just the strong and the striped ones. Yeah. You want to meet them and you want to understand them. What makes the heart change is that you understand the heart. And you understand only things that you have a relationship with. You cannot understand, transform, or even transcend things that you don't have a relationship with. Yeah, this is a footnote to yesterday. We'll continue the subject. Right now, I'd like you to kind of take a meditation posture, relax.